Well, welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you as well. So can you get started by giving the listeners a little bit of a background about your company and what type of financing you do?
Sure. Happy to. So we finance commercial real estate only for business owners all around the country. So we do that through a couple different programs. We're experts, national experts at the SBA's 504 loan program, and then we also have a low loan-to-value conventional program. But it's all about commercial real estate. We believe in creating wealth through commercial real estate ownership for business owners. So that's what we do. And we are a non-bank direct commercial lender.
It sounds like you are very focused on the on the real estate owned by businesses. Tell us a little bit more about how you settle on that niche.
Well, my background goes back 20 years to GE Capital and then Heller Financial, and then I actually started another company that was before the alt lending fascination, before it was cool to be in alt lending, I guess. And I started that company in 2002. We were the largest non-bank specialty lender in our space. Actually became the third largest nationwide behind some household name, too big to fail banks as recently as 2012. But I sold it to a local community bank, a large local community bank, back in 2010. And that went okay for a little while, but then I guess the local community bank decided they wanted to sell themselves to a larger bank, which they did, and I used that opportunity to try and spin out my baby back to myself, and that didn't work so well. They were negotiating with all sorts of folks besides just me at that time. So I left, and I started over with Fountainhead Commercial Capital, and we are 3 years and 1 month open. Already very profitable, which I'm very grateful for, very blessed. We are on our way to becoming the largest in our space again, and we're doing a lot of things differently than what I did sort of in my first chapter. There's not too many entrepreneurs that get to, to have a restart in their industry and get to do things a little bit differently than, the second time around. So that's been pretty gratifying and pretty exciting, and I'm having more fun than I've ever had in the lending world for the last 20 years. And it's gotten to be a very interesting space these days, with everybody kind of coming out of the woodworks, all sorts of innovative lenders here and there, and my traditional competitors, banks and credit unions, continuing to shrink, and it feels a little bit like the Wild West some days,
Well, it must be very interesting. I think you have been in outlending before outlending was a thing with the tech bros. Obviously we're making fun of ourselves too. We are here in Silicon Valley. What's your perspective on the new fintechs coming into outlending? Obviously this is not new, but tell us about your perspective here and things that there are new that's good versus otherwise.
Yeah, well, so I grew up in the non-bank lending world with, as I said before, with GE Capital and with Heller before GE bought Heller. Started my own non-bank lending company, before this was the trend. So I come at it from a financial perspective first and foremost, as opposed to what I see some of the folks out there in the space these days, and not so much in our world of small business lending and small balance commercial, but I see it a lot in consumer loans and, merchant cash advance and things like that, where it's really, they're more of a technologist first and a lender second. And I hope it ends well for them. I don't know if it will, because there are, there's certain mindsets about being a lender that you have to consider. And you just approach things a little bit differently. That said, what's been exciting is I've always been considered an innovator in our space. I've always wanted to be a niche lender. I think, the more you can focus on a niche, the more you can dominate a niche, as opposed to many of my colleagues who I compete against in the traditional banking world who try to be generalists and try to be, all things to all people. I've always sort of fought against that. So I've always done things a little bit differently. It's exciting to see some of the new folks that are coming into the financial services industry in general and what they're bringing. You know, it's forcing me to sort of level up and do some interesting things ourselves, and we can talk more about that in a little bit. But, you know, I think we are fundamentally in an era where things are changing. There's not the loyalty to a bank that there was 20, 30 years ago. Yet banks still have very low cost of funds through by virtue of their charters, but they're not nearly as creative nor fast moving for a variety of reasons. Some of which deals with compliance, but some of it also deals with just mindset. They're not as fast moving as perhaps society requires of them these days. And again, we can talk some more about this, but that's where I have a lot of fun. I like to be the fastest guy around in my space. I like to be the guy who's coming up with new things. I like to be the try to see what is working well in other areas of finance and apply it to our little niche. And I think we've done that pretty successfully thus far. Yeah.
Yeah, and it sounds like the you're focusing on an area that is really not. I would say your competition. You don't have a lot of new fintech competition. In some ways, you are taking the bread and butter loans made by banks, and making the process better and more efficient.
Better customer experience, much faster. Everything. And it's interesting. I think fintechs would naturally evolve to our space. I mean, I've sort of had that contention for, a good couple of years now, thinking that they're going to head in our direction. I haven't seen it much yet. I'm not exactly welcoming it necessarily, but I think it's the natural evolution for some of these folks. That said, I still think we are a few years ahead of the game compared to our more traditional lenders in our space and in some of the things that we're doing versus what they're doing at the moment. But it's not always going to be that way. I mean, I do think you see more and more traditional banks and credit unions trying to adapt some of the more cutting edge, innovative ways. So I don't know that we're going to always have this advantage, but that's part of my job, is to try and stay ahead as much as possible.
Yeah, I think the fact that you're a outlender but has a ton of traditional lending experience really helps. When you look at what fintechs are doing, usually the most successful models are the ones that can take a pretty straightforward product and scale it up quite a bit. On the real estate side, I think you see a lot of activity on fix and flip, or I guess the rehab loans
for
direct investments, and those are obviously much easier to grapple with, right?
Right. Yeah. And in our space, I mean, I've always thought of it as more aspirational. I mean, I have the direct experience of it having been very successful, even coming out of the recession. I mean, what happens as we go into a recession, and I'm not suggesting we're there just yet, despite what's happening with the yield curve and tariff wars and some other stuff that's going on right now. But another 2 or 3 years, who knows? And as we go into that, what happens is most of my competition goes to the sidelines, and they stop lending. That's kind of the knee-jerk reaction. And so long as I have continued access to capital supply, and we've been through a few rounds of funding, and we have large warehouse lines of credit, and we have exclusive buyers of our paper and whatnot. So long as that continues, then we'll be fine, and we'll actually be able to take more market share when that eventuality happens. In the meantime, obviously we're duking it out in the trenches on a daily basis, and we win a lot, but occasionally we lose. The commonality is all of our credits are very bankable credits. They'd be the envy of any of these fintech guys in terms of collateralization and in terms of debt service coverages and personal guarantees and minimum FICO scores and everything else. But we're not getting the kind of coupons that perhaps some of the fintech guys have gotten fat, happy, and lazy about. ours are a little thinner. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's ironic when the fintech. It's ironic when the fintech coupons and yield are the ones that are called fat and juicy. So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And speaking of competition, you know, certainly recently Goldman Sachs has come into the investment real estate financing market, it probably wouldn't be a huge stretch to think about them looking at the other types of real estate financing, you know. Any thought about that, Goldman Sachs, as well as other potential bank competition coming into the space?
Well, I have, and I obviously keep an eye on it regularly, but the reality is I have some insulation. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's some serious barriers to entry in terms of some of the competition, whether it's, just other entrepreneurs coming into the space, or even legacy banks. And part of that's because our niche is very, very, has a tremendous amount of specialized knowledge. I mean, a big chunk of what we do is SBA related, is Small Business Administration related. You don't just jump into the SBA space without any knowledge, and without any experience. It usually takes a couple of years at least to get up to speed to the level that you need. So, I think you're going to continue to see some folks dabble in fix and flip and perhaps, you know, investment, small balance, commercial, but what we do is really owner user, owner operator stuff that usually has an SBA guarantee, and that's just, like I said, it's not you don't just wake up in the morning as a lender, get out of bed, and say, you know what, I think I'll make an SBA loan today. You could try that, but that'll be a disaster. So So we definitely have some specialized knowledge that's just not readily, you know, duplicatable, and frankly, our world is, in some respects, is kind of shrinking. It's definitely aging to some extent, and we're not getting as much fresh blood into our particular, you know, area of the lending space, perhaps as others are. So which is kind of interesting. You know, we traditionally, having done this for a couple of decades now, a lot of traditional, conventional bankers, ordinary bankers, sometimes had a tendency to look down their noses at the SBA world. Now, after this last recession, I think they realized SBA kind of saved everybody's bacon a little bit, and and it's a much more profitable area of banking than perhaps some folks have given them credit for. It doesn't deserve the sort of bottom of the barrel reputation that sometimes occurs. Certainly doesn't deserve the, you know, looking down their noses scornfulness at this space that does happen from traditional lenders. So, but that's okay. You know, the more, you know, people want to be arrogant and ignorant, that's fine. I got no problem with it. I'll stay below the radar screen doing what we're doing.
Yeah, I think a lot of the bad rap with SBA loans, and especially with just how sometimes it can be tedious and time-consuming and so on, probably has to do with a lack of rigorous process sometimes, right? And it sounds like
it does, and it's some of that's just a lack of understanding. I mean, the beauty about SBA lending in many ways, we're still light years away from, you know, desktop underwriting like with residential mortgages, but there is a lot of similarities from deal to deal in terms of the documentation, which is part of the reason why, you know, we came out with the first, artificial intelligence enhanced software, basically where we actually have code now that's reading all the tax returns, different kinds of tax returns, financial statements, debt schedules, et cetera, doing all of our underwriting calculations for us, auto-populating all of our approval letters, et cetera. I mean, we were the first ones to come out with that, and that's what's allowed us to do approvals in under 2 hours, which is completely unheard of. I mean, that's a 10x times multiple enhancement versus what we normally compete with. Most banks in our space take, and credit unions too, take 2 to 3 weeks to approve a loan. We're now doing it under 2 hours, which is truly revolutionary. But we're able to do it because it is, for the most part, it's fairly cookie cutter in terms of the information that we need to look at from deal to deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a very interesting perspective. You as an industry veteran, speaking about AI, you know, as you know, we part of our own business deal with AI and so on as well. You know, from your perspective, do you see, what do you see the state of the art for AI in underwriting? Do you see it I think there is certainly some perspective from more conventional lenders and bankers with AI not being able, believing that AI not being able to replace much of the underwriting. On the other end of the extreme, obviously you have people coming from the technology side saying AI can do everything. What is your perspective?
Right. Well, I think, naturally, I disagree with both ends of the spectrum. I think like a lot of things, it's somewhere in the middle. I don't think commercial real estate lending, commercial lending, SBA lending, it's a little bit, I've often said this for a long time, it's a little bit art, a little bit science, you know. The problem with complete automation is you take out human subjectivity. And I understand that's the goal, and that, you know, fortunately has some benefits, but it also has some downsides. And if you're in a space like we are, that it can't be 100% objective, independent, science based, you've got to allow for some subjectivity. You've got to allow for some of the art. That means you probably can't go all the way to the extreme and completely automate like you can in the residential mortgage world, for instance, which even then I'm sure there's a residential mortgage guy that'll listen to this and say, well, no, we have some art of our own. And I'm sure you do, but that'll be the exceptions. The commercial real estate world, SBA lending world is, I could give you lots of examples of situations where, if the following variables were to occur and certain trends that I saw, we may very well still approve that loan, even though, the code tells us we shouldn't. So that's where it's, we're kind of in the gray area a little bit. I mean, I don't think either extreme is correct. From our perspective, it's extremely valuable to have built what we have so that it preloads all of our documentation. It preloads our internal reporting. It preloads our internal database so that we don't have to, replicate, as much data entry as we probably did historically. It literally shaves hours and hours off the time of our underwriters. So from that perspective, it's extremely helpful. But, I don't entirely trust the machines either. So we definitely include a human element in terms of our review of this. While the code does everything in about 10 minutes at the moment, and probably can even go faster if we ramped up even more, we only agree to approve things or disprove things under 2 hours. And so the question is, what do we spend the extra hour and 50 minutes for? It's not to go to lunch and things like that. I mean, it's to do other basic due diligence things that you would do on a traditional commercial real estate deal. We can't, unfortunately, at the moment, we can't interface with the credit bureaus, for instance. But so we have to pull that manually. FICO scores and look at personal debt obligations manually. We always jump on Google Earth to look at the property and look at the neighborhood and do some other Google searches to see what's out there about on our borrower or on the property, etc. So and we double and triple check the numbers. So all that takes a little bit of added time, but again, that's to take nothing away from the fact that we're still about a 10x improvement versus what's the norm in our space right now. And I'm not convinced Amazon's coming into our space anytime soon, like they seem to be coming into so many other spaces, but the mentality that Amazon has shifted in everyone's head is, we need things done immediately. We need things done tomorrow. If I can order a book or a pair of socks or dog food and it arrives tomorrow through Amazon Prime, then by God, why shouldn't I be able to get a $3 million loan on the property that I went and visited this morning by tomorrow? And with us, you can. Most others in our space, you can't, and you'll have to still wait a few weeks. But, I do think they'll catch up to us in time, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's so fascinating. I think you can see the waves moving, right? So first it's the credit cards that are, entirely automated, and then it was
right,
the
credit score and things, yeah.
Yeah. I think the state of the art is moving ahead, and you're certainly riding that wave and on the forefront of it. I think particularly with commercial property, the use of automation and artificial intelligence is still not completely widespread. So it sounds like you have a good formula now.
Well, we're trying. We're certainly trying. We're adding more things to it. I mean, I'm now building a CRM on top of it. You know, what I've told my guys internally is, you know, I've always felt like the biggest issue with a CRM system is humans, is human input, right? I mean, it's only as good as the information that's in there, and notoriously, salespeople hate to sit there for, you know, an hour inputting all the data fields and whatnot. So that's what's kind of interesting about us, in that our Pronto system now takes all that information in on the front side, so that we're actually minimizing, you know, the human resistance, let's call it, of putting in the information we need. So that's, we're sort of tying them together, and then, you know, we're also tracking where we're at in the process, so that, you know, if an intermediary sends us a transaction, they know exactly where they're at in the stage. So yeah, I mean, this is something that we've been doing internally for 7-8 months, testing it, making sure it's doing everything we need to do, and we're continuing to improve it. And who knows? Maybe it'll be something we spin out eventually. I'm not really sure. But it's definitely giving us a, you know, an unfair competitive advantage in our space, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Shifting gears a little bit, let's talk about what's ahead. So, do you see any economic or political factors that could impact, you know, the financing that you do to help businesses?
Well, I mean, you know, you can always have that, you know, black swan event. You know, there could be another 9/11 type of event that could, that, you know, changes radically everything. You know, I'm not real keen on the, you know, the tariffs that are being thrown back and forth across the Pacific Ocean at the moment. You know, I don't think long term that's real helpful. I'm certainly a big believer in free trade, but it's also got to be fair. And I think sometimes we're so hell bent on a society of trying to push the narrative of free trade that we sometimes get taken advantage of. So, you know, I hope this is a temporary thing, because I don't think it's going to be helpful for the markets, and I think it'll be destabilizing if it continues long term. But you know, beyond that, as I said earlier, I mean, what we do is very aspirational in nature. So most of our clients, this is buying their own real estate, you know, a home for their business, because they can't have people, you know, remoting in from all over the place. You know, the magic really happens when their people are shoulder to shoulder, and then that still exists for a lot of businesses. Not everybody can remote in from somewhere else. So if that's the case, then what we're doing fundamentally is creating wealth for a business owner when they decide to stop paying their landlord and pay themselves. And it's one of the few things that a business owner can do to really, without too much trouble, really sort of, you know, flip the switch and help create wealth for themselves by owning an appreciable asset like commercial real estate. And oftentimes, even right now, with rates as low as they've been for many, many years, and even as they're rising, it's still oftentimes a lot cheaper on a monthly cash flow basis to own the real estate than to continue leasing it. And so it makes a major impact. And, you know, most of my clients have gone through this experience of, you know, they once were in an apartment and they decided to own their own home. It's really the same type of shift mentally with what they're doing when they want a home for their business. And it's most of the time it's the largest purchase of their lives. So they take it very seriously, but they're interested in good times to do this as much as they are in bad times to do this, particularly in bad economic times. You know, a lot of business owners get very interested in this if they've proven their business model and they're fairly stable. Oftentimes they get very excited about the fact that they can kind of be contrarians. And most business owners, entrepreneurs are contrarians at some level, in that, you know, they had to resist everybody who told them at the beginning, don't go into business for yourself, you know, and they did it anyway. So they have that kind of contrarian streak with them anyway. So, you know, if I'm not saying we're going to have a repeat of what we did 10 years ago with the Great Recession, but, you know, if we have a economic hiccup here and there, you know, values come down a little bit, I think you'll see you'll continue to see growth in the small business lending sector because you'll continue to see small business owners trying to take advantage of the opportunities that are out there. So, I don't think what happens in Washington, it has some impact on us, but you know what? I think it's better when business owners keep their heads down and they focus on doing what they do best rather than getting distracted with what's on the nightly news.
Very well put. So I guess finally, looking ahead, can you tell our listeners a couple initiatives that you're working on to stay ahead of competition and keep moving the business forward?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the things that we've done over the last couple of years is we've created our own I should back up and say in our space, the secondary market in the 504 space, SBA 504 space, and even owner-occupied first lien loans, conventional lien loans, was pretty well decimated by the Great Recession, to the point where the secondary market in that space has shrunk 90% or so. So we've sort of taken it upon ourselves to try and restart that as well, and that was one of the initiatives we've done at Fountainhead since the beginning. And it's kind of turned us into, we're still an originator, but we also sort of have this platform business whereby we sell off our paper, and we sell off our paper from things that we originate, or we even have the ability to buy loans from others and turn around and sell it off on our platform. And I think you're going to see us continue to grow that piece of the business in the future, because I think we really are in an era where traditional banks, they don't have the kind of loan demand, perhaps that they should, or in certain areas, or they don't have the ability to generate the assets that they need. And so I think you're going to start to see a lot of banks and credit unions being net buyers of assets from folks like us. And when you do it right, and you're competent, and you're organized, and you've got good credits, I fundamentally believe there's an appetite for that. And I think it'll continue to expand. And I think that's very exciting for us because, it'll be good to sort of almost be that portal to some of these banks and credit unions who just don't otherwise have, the kind of deal flow that we've done. Now we've gotten there because of our reputations, because we've been sort of omnipresent for a long time, myself especially in the 504 sector, and we'll continue to do that. But that's one of the things that we've got that's continuing to expand. I think what we've done technologically over the last 9 to 12 months, you're going to see us continuing to expand in that space, to the point where, like I said earlier, it may be something that we eventually spin off to let other lenders utilize what we've, are clearly better mousetrap. And there's not much else out there like what we've built, because I've tested and looked at everything, I can assure you. So I think that's where we're headed. We will probably get into some other tangential sectors in the small business lending space. You probably shouldn't be surprised to see us doing a few other loan programs here over the next 6 to 18 months. And it's all towards our vision of we want to be the largest small business lender in the country that's a non-bank. It's kind of like that old PowerPoint that we all saw a couple years ago. I think it was an IBM or something where, the largest taxi operator doesn't own their own taxis anymore, which is Uber, or the largest movie shop doesn't actually own the movies, which is Netflix, or keep going down the list. The largest retailer doesn't have a lot of brick and mortar retailing, Amazon, and on and on and on. I think we're into an era where the largest small business lender might not have loans on their balance sheet, or not for very long, and that's kind of where we're headed with all this.
That's super exciting. Well, Chris, thank you so much for taking the time to talk today.
And my pleasure.
This is very, very, very illuminating for our listeners.